This is Monday Brown Beggar. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. I'm the archivist on my website of angus-mcleod.com. McLeod spelled M-C-L-E-O-D. And before I get to our guest today, I wanted to quickly point out to the listening audience that they should go check out this story. It's on a specialist, Mark Hall, who produced and distributed an angry hip-hop song in July 2009 when he discovered that he would not be allowed to leave active duty due to Army Stop Loss policy. Specialist Hall continued to serve with his unit for the next 4 months, undergoing command and medical health counseling as requested. Now, I'm quoting basically right from the Courage, CourageToResist.org's website. Basically, it goes on to say, I explained to my first sergeant that the hardcore rap song was a free expression of how people feel about the Army and its stop loss policy. I explained that the song was neither a physical threat nor any threat whatsoever. I told him it was just a hip-hop, explained Specialist Hall. Now, in February 2010, Specialist Mark Hall was sent to the Middle East for a court-martial, where his chances of gaining a fair defense and expert witnesses to help him out are hindered by the fact that it's far away from the United States. It also is going to cost a lot of money. To people that basically want to go check out more information on this story, go to www.CourageToResist.org. And also, I'd like to quickly point out from the U.S. Constitution, the First Amendment said, Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of religion or prohibit the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of press or the right of the person peacefully to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievance. With that in mind, you know, you may not agree with what Specialist Hall said in his song, but it's still he's expressing what he has viewed as a veteran. He did a whole, he did one tour over to Iraq, and then what happened was is they wanted to send him back. So, well, he should have the right to express himself that way, long as he does not support any type of violence. He's got to, you know, that's what they have to express now. Also, at the same time, before I get to our guest, I wanted to quickly talk about some anniversaries that, you know, I've had in my own life. I was listening to the Kevin Kelso's show last week, and they're talking about how long that they've been fighting for. And, you know, really troubled me was that when I started to think about, you know, how long that I've been basically battling against what some people call the New World Order, or you can call them the elitists or whatever you want to call them. March 9th of 2000 was when I was introduced to what you call the elitist. I had a homeless lady who my wife and I were giving a place to have hot shower and some hot meals to her. She basically told me that the organization I was writing about would win. Now, I was writing a fictional novel. The next night, March 10th, at 11:30 at night, 2000, our 1982 limited edition Mustang was destroyed by hit and run. License plates given by the witness were traced to a different vehicle. The police later told me about 2 weeks after that that they traced to a different vehicle and the driver didn't fit the description and the policeman thought it was a drunk driver that hit and destroyed our car. However, is the night that our car was hit, as it parked across the street from our old house, the street lights were out. And this is only about three times that my wife and I lived in this house in Calgary, Alberta, for about 4 years. And in that 4 years, only three times the streetlights were out. And that was one of the times. Also at the same time, the tire tracks leading up to hitting our vehicle from behind were straight on. Now, I don't know very many people that go drinking and driving that can drive a straight line for, you know, half a block. And also at the same time, there's a bunch of other stuff that really bothered me. Also, with March 2008, when I received another death threat, I know your routine. I can hide. I can take you out. It's just stuff like that. But you know what I want to say to people is, you can't be afraid to stand up and express yourself. You can't be afraid anymore. You have to start standing up for what is right, and what is right for everyone. Because what happens if we don't start standing together? We'll fall apart. United we stand, divided we fall. That's a simple rule that everyone should basically grasp a hold of. Now, with that said, I have our first guest on the line, And I guess that's Truth Now, the hip-hop artist out of New York. Hello?
You're ready.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. Now, the first thing I wanted to ask you about is that we have an upcoming radio station for We Are Change. Could you tell the listening audience a little bit about that and where they can go to listen and, you know, some of the artists and other people are going to be putting in programs for it?
Sure, yeah. We're doing this internet-based project, and what we're doing right now is we're just trying to get everybody together, and we're talking on a voice server, just getting everybody sort of used to it, meeting each other, and it's completely international. So we have techies in Amsterdam, and we have promotion people in Ecuador, and I'm the music director, so I've been able to talk with and get the catalog together from like some of our favorite artists. So everybody from like me and Gemini to Payday Monsanto, Amkilla, and like DubFX has come through and delivered his CD in high quality. Number One Yankees, like just all these people that we're listening to, and that are giving the movement like a voice and a sound.
And also, what are some of the people? Are you going to have talk shows on there too? What are some of the people that are going to be doing talk shows anyway?
Yeah, absolutely. I know Robin and Colleen are going to be doing talk. Those are people that, you know, operate their own We Are Change chapters. And also my friend Patrick is an Iraq veteran, and he's in Indiana, I believe. So a lot of people are going to be doing talk, but, like, also we want to make sure that that the talk is, you know, there's so many places where people can listen to, like, all the serious hardcore news, that we want to keep it kind of fun and light, kind of how We Are Change New York City did their television pilot. That's kind of going to be almost like a rudimentary basis for what we're doing, and playing a lot of music, just because we want to listen to it too. You know, even the people that are hosting want to listen to music.
And when exactly is this going to be online so people can listen into it?
Right now we're trying to launch by like May 1st. I'm not sure if that's going to be held to specifically, because we want to make sure that we bring the best programming possible before you know, before we do anything. But yeah, it's looking pretty good. I know a lot of us are really putting our nose to the grindstone on this.
And also, you know, if there's anyone out there listening right now that may want to start contribute in any way they can, is there a way that they can get a hold of you or someone else from We Are Change, a chapter that you're involved with?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a website, and off the top of my head, I believe it's wearechangeradio.net, but you can Google search us for We Are Change Radio, or get involved really with any of the chapters, because all the chapters now have the mumble information, so they can get on the voice chat with us and start building. And also we have a Facebook fan page and all that stuff. So yeah, just type in We Are Change Internet Radio and you'll get one of us for sure.
And before I introduced you, I was talking about the specialist Mark Hall. Have you heard anything about this gentleman that's actually been sent over to, I believe it's Kuwait, to face a court-martial because he didn't want to go back to Iraq?
Oh, no, I haven't heard that. Is he with Oath Keepers?
No, he's the one, he put out this song about Stop Loss, and we're hoping to play it just as we're exiting with you in a couple of minutes. But what happened was, is that for putting his song out, the Pentagon and the White House didn't take very kindly what he had to say. And you can actually go to, just a moment, please, courage2resist.org to actually listen to a copy of that, or hear more on Specialist Mark Hall, and then hit a click, and then you're sent over to a link where it's actually shown.
Well, I support what he's doing, because I was thinking just last night, you know, this is not really going to stop. None of this is going to stop until we just say no and put some of these federally funded and government killing machines down and just say, no, we won't do this anymore. And that, you know, unfortunately, that's going to come from the troops, and it's going to be the hardest because they're the people that can all face court-martial.
Well, actually, I heard one way that the Vietnam War was actually stopped, and I'm just basically giving people what I heard, you know,
sure.
is that the enlisted man started to take out some of the officers, and the more officers that disappeared, then what happens is all of a sudden they didn't want to fight the Vietnam War anymore. Now, I'm just telling you what I heard. Now, do I support that? I do not condone violence. However, is even JFK said, if a peaceful revolution can't be seen, then, you know, an armed revolution is just around the corner.
Yeah, exactly. It will be deemed necessary. And that's why I think it's so interesting that they're putting their targets, they're aligning their targets now very directly with the movement so that, I mean, just take a look at the Pentagon shooter and the guy who shot up that court. We're finding out now that the guns that they used for those attacks used to be in Tennessee state police custody. And now for two incidents of violence that were blamed on 9/11 truthers, these guns came out of police custody. That's very interesting. You know, we have to take a look at what that actually means. You know, there's no reason to believe that it's not possible for the government to have programmed suicide killers. I mean, Sirhan was able to fire, what, 6-7 shots, but a total of 10 bullets were fired at Robert Kennedy. I mean, we have a history of this. It goes all the way back to MK Ultra. So, you know, people need to wake up a little bit and realize that when the government wants somebody to go kill somebody else, they can do it. They have ways and means. You know, we are just a simple biological computer, and with enough programming, you can basically make a human being do just about anything. That's why there's Project Monarch and all these projects that were designed to break down the human psyche and to rebuild it for the intentions of, you know, CIA killing machine.
I got a quick question to ask you. Recently, United States of American government, they just put forth this bill, this law, which basically states that anyone flying out of Canada, if your plane goes over the airspace of United States, even if you're going nonstop to Europe, and you head over a little bit of American airspace, and your name is on the no-fly list down the United States, you're not allowed on that flight, even though that flight does not land or originate from the United States.
Oh, interesting. I mean, I'm not exactly familiar with that. Hold on, my phone is about to die. Let me just change phones over real quick. Reggie, stay on. Oh, man.
Okay, we have Truth Now from New York. He's having a little bit of problems. He's got to switch over to his phone. But, you know, that law that actually just passed by the Homeland Security, it's just amazing that as a Canadian... And even though if Canadians don't go down to the United States, even flying over the American airspace, you could still be, under the jurisdiction of American law.
Yeah,
it just blows my mind something like that could happen.
Yeah, we take very kindly to impressing our will and doctrine on foreign nationals, in all ways and means.
So what do you think about the Southern Poverty Group just put out a report about We Are Change, actually included We Are Change in the report, and they're actually threw out that word terrorist?
Yeah, well, if you question the government and you think that the Bilderberg Group exists, you're clearly some sort of anti-Semite. I mean, this is ridiculous. This is absolute nonsense. We even had the Liberty Restoration Project. I can't remember her name. I think it was Kathleen or something. She just went down there and interviewed the lady, and she found herself to be just in the midst of total double speak. And, it was ridiculous, the assertions that were made, as if you were to research the Bilderberg Group, that would make you completely insane and incapable of making, you know, logical decisions about what's happening in the world. It was literally, she was asserting that there was no push for globalism, even though we've had, you know, so many world leaders specifically espouse their belief that there should be a world government with carbon taxes. It was nonsense. I couldn't even believe what I was hearing, and I mean, we were easily being compared to like skinheads and radicals and Nazis, basically.
Yeah, and I'd like to point out to our listening audience that both Truth Now and myself, we both believe the Holocaust did happen.
Yeah, it's a very terrible thing, and my grandfather fought to liberate death camps like Dachau and Auschwitz.
Yeah, and I'm also, at this time, currently, I'm writing a book about a little child that's taken through the Holocaust. I was writing it from a fictional standpoint. However, as I put a lot of research into it and actually taken, you know, gone and seen a bunch of research into, you know, how the Jewish people and non-Jewish people were treated within Auschwitz.
Yeah, and I mean, you have Catholics, Gypsies, homosexuals. I mean, let's get it straight really quickly for the record. The eugenicist movement came out of the Anglo-American Empire and was given to the Germans and the Thule Society as a way to establish control. You need a scapegoat. But these people are still alive. They still live here. Like we touched upon in our last interview, I mean, we brought the scientists back here afterwards and to Latin America. So, I mean, people can't get it confused. These people, they never really stopped having power. They might have lost face in Germany, but, you know, there is still very much a eugenicist movement, and it's terrible, and it's what We Are Change is fighting. The New World Order is code word for we will develop AIDS programs, we will develop SARS, we don't think Asian people have as much of a right to this planet as what they believe is, you know, some kind of super white race, and it's disgusting, it's inhumane, and it needs to be stopped.
Yeah, and also that fictional novel, my first novel that I wrote, in copyright April 20th, 2001, Library of Congress, that was about the rise of the Fourth Reich. And I broke it up into different headquarters. And, you know, for the Canadian headquarters, the second leader was actually co-founder of a grassroots right-wing political party that reached opposition party level in the federal parliament in Canada. So basically, I guess some people in Alberta didn't like the fact that I tied them in with Known World Terrorist, tied them in with the People's Choice Bikers group out of northeast United States, tied them with drug smuggling, tied them in with the CIA, FBI, and the list goes on and on. You know, and I was doing this stuff back in the late 90s when I was doing it, and, you know, the book itself was caught print in April 20th, 2001. It just blew my mind how there's actually people now talking about that stuff, and I'm looking going, wow. And, you know, when my wife and I, when we were attacked, and actually we were living in a tent for a little while, when September 11th happened, we were living in a tent. We had next to no worldly possessions. And we were wondering where everyone was because they didn't see what was going on.
Right. Isn't that crazy how it's just, like, hidden in plain sight like that? I mean, I'm finding it more and more ridiculous every single time I watch the North Tower explode outwards, because that's what happens. I mean, if you have the kind of dispersion and the atomization of a building that would, you know, be composed of 110 stories of steel and concrete, the two of the strongest buildings ever crafted by man, and, you know, we like to refer to it as a collapse. What collapse? They from inside out were blown hundreds of feet in every direction. I mean, I just attended the Treason in America conference, and luckily we were depicted as sort of dissidents and wild conspirators on Nightline, and I found that coverage to be wholly inaccurate. And if you go online and watch Loose Change, their entire interview with Chris something or other, Chris Hitpiece from Nightline, you find out at the end that he is basically willing to admit that they will not interview a family member from the conference. They can use Bob McElvain for sound clips, you know, and say that he admits the government killed his son on 9/11. But no, they won't interview him. They won't interview Manny Badillo. They won't interview any of the scientists or architects or engineers that were speaking there. And when they interviewed Colleen Rowley, he attacked her. He was like, you know, do you think that the government killed all these people in a vast conspiracy? And it's like, listen, your wording is loaded, and the way that you present this information is not objective at all. You're only doing it now because of the Pentagon shooter. You're only doing it now because of the guy that flew the tax plane into the IRS building. You're only trying to do this because you think that somehow you'll be able to link us with a radicalized militia movement, you know, that is preparing for World War III or whatever. And it's insane. And I think that it's so transparent now, but I can't tell because I don't live in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, and around me, I don't see, I mean, I do see a vast, vast improvement in the awareness of the individuals and the human beings that I live with and around. But I don't know because I'm not in the middle of America. I'm on the coast.
And also, we have to point out, too, that Colleen Rowley, she is actually a former FBI agent.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, when someone starts criticizing her, if you haven't done your time and service in what she's talking about, and you
right,
haven't...
where you get off.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And basically, so that's why I say to the media, too, that when you start talking about war and you start talking about the troops and you start talking about all this stuff, and I'm just standing off to the side. And as a veteran who's been there, I'm looking at them going, where are you getting off talking like this? You know, how can you be so patriotic? Where were you when we're having trouble in the military? Where were you when the soldiers are committing suicide? Where were you when basically society had turned its back on the soldiers coming back? And even in Canada, we're not seeing that as much, but down in the United States, you know, Walter Reed's falling apart. You know, the highest rate of suicide is happening within the United States in regards to the soldiers returning from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Missouri, the MIAC report, you know, it labels veterans as terrorists, potential terrorists and homeland terrorists, because they're the ones that would actually know something about combat in the streets because they've been there, and you know that's their first target if things go bad, and you know, and they turn, if all these FEMA camps go live, is that any veteran with patriotic ties, or you know, God forbid you're a veteran with We Are Change, I mean, they're going to be hitting the grindstone. They're going to be going after them first and foremost, because those are the people that could, you know, lead a successful revolution in this country if it were to be so necessary due to outright tyranny and genocide by this government inside their own borders. Because that's what we're talking about. And unfortunately, it's not popular to talk about, but the point is that it's happened before, and it'll happen again if people aren't awake and don't declare sovereignty over their own humanity.
And also, there are some veterans of Iraq, Veterans Against War. Adam Kokish, who's running for Congress down in the United States. A good friend of mine, Leonard Shelton, 20-year combat veteran from the Marine Corps. You know, here's a gentleman suffering from PTSD, and he doesn't have much in life, and even he's not allowed to see his own kids. And I'm just looking at the system going, you know, rather than correct the problem, you created this situation with these individuals. Now, rather than correct the problem, you've just discarded them. You threw them off to the side. And you're hearing story after story of veterans who's because of budget cuts, their medical expenses are being, you know, are increasing, but the compensation from the government's being cut.
Right. I mean, we only have to look to Gulf War Syndrome, you know, to know what they're willing to do. They will eat their own. They will, you know, they will just abandon these people to some of the worst possible conditions imaginable, because they're using depleted uranium. And a lot of people don't know what that is or why that matters. But the point is that the war in Iraq, both of them, have been nuclear wars. It's just nuclear on such a microcosm rather than the macrocosm of Hiroshima. Depleted uranium is against the Geneva Convention. It is absolutely poisonous and torturous to anyone who has to operate and live in those conditions.
We also have to remember, too, you know, Saddam Hussein wouldn't allow any known terrorists to exist within his nation. He didn't allow any form of opposition. I mean, if ever anyone showed any opposition to him, he would basically rise up and take them out. But it looks like we got a call in right now. That might be the next guest calling in. But, you know, I wanted to quickly touch on your heading down to South America for a little while.
Yeah, I hope to, within the next couple of months, be living in Guayaquil in Ecuador, recording a full-length album with the Number One Yankees, who you can listen to at myspace.com/NumberOneYankees. And they are very good friends of mine, and we cut a single together that is unreleased right now, but we will be giving it away very soon with a new music video.
And also, what is your basically thoughts on... do you have any other projects coming up right now, or?
Yeah, sure. Let me just touch upon that. My EP, which has been postponed a million times, has now become a collaborative EP with entirely new material, with the artist BS from Brooklyn, and we work very well together, and we're looking forward to giving people the truth about bullshit, which is going to be 9 brand new songs. And a couple of remixes and stuff. It's going to be fun.
And it looks like we have our next guest that's online right now on the phone. So I'm just basically going to say thank you so much for coming on, Truth Now. Do you want to leave some last-minute words, contact information to our listening audience?
Sure. I basically say what I always say, which is you can email me, truthnow420@gmail.com, and... be on the lookout for The Singularity, which is a sort of transhumanist agenda to merge with AI. It's very interesting. I suggest people get informed on the state of nanotechnology and bioengineering because it's very, very disturbing at this time.
Well, thank you so much for coming on there, Truth Now. It's Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, CFRO, Mundy Brown Bagger. And we're going to continue on to our next guest. Our next guest is has spent 3 years in the U.S. Army counterintelligence, mostly in Europe, from 1960 to 1988. He was a stockbroker with 18 of those years owning his own brokerage firm. In 1991, our guest began writing the International Forecaster newsletter, which has information on business, financing, economic, social, and political issues worldwide. With that said, I'd like to introduce Bob Chapman.
Hello there.
Well, thank you so much for agreeing to come on there, Bob. I was watching a video on the internet today, and it was Bill Moyer had the William Black on, who was a former senior regulator who cracked down on banks during the savings and loan crisis of the 80s. Black was saying that the financial crisis has been driven by fraud. What's your comment on that there, Bob?
Well, I think that's true, but I think there's more to it than that. And I think that these people who control governments throughout the world, I think they deliberately caused the credit crisis, and during that crisis just went in with both hands and stole everything they could get their hands on. And how they did that first was with the creation of the syndication of mortgages in the form of bonds called CDOs, which is collateralized debt obligations, or MBS, and they had a number of titles. And there's a lawsuit, civil in nature, that is being has been filed by the Attorney General for the state of Connecticut, and he's accusing the 3 rating agencies, Moody's, S&P, and Fitch, of fraud in the issuance of ratings. And, of course, those ratings were made with the cooperation of and connivance of almost all of the major investment banks, brokerage houses, and banks in the United States, mostly in New York City. And my question is, why hasn't he brought criminal charges? I mean, these people should be in jail. We're talking trillions of dollars. And the money was all stolen because of these phony ratings. And the people who bought them were banks and brokerage houses throughout Canada, the United States. 60% of that paper was sold in Europe. And finally, there's been some lawsuits by labor unions and pension plans that you don't hear much about. But this was the first time an AG did that. And I think that it may be the beginning, along with Black's testimony. And I have another Bill Moyers tape that was done 6 months ago with Black, and he wasn't as pointed as he was in this last one. And there's no question. Trillions of dollars have been stolen.
One point that William Black brought up, actually he was saying that one reason why they're not really going after and arresting people is because the Bush and even the Obama administration, they have CEOs from organizations like AIG and Goldman and Sachs and others who are actually involved with the government. So what these CEOs aren't going to basically do anything to, you know, to take away the golden handshake sort of thing. So my question to you, with your involvement within the stock industry so long, and also the author of The International Forecaster, what would you foresee as changes that need to be done in order to correct the situation where we no longer have the wolf in charge of the chicken, basically the chickens, is what you want to say?
Well, to keep the wolf out of the chicken coop, it's very simple. The American voters have got to go to the election in November and throw 95% of the incumbents, irrespective of party, out of office. If they do that, they'll have a whole new slate of people in there who have not been paid off yet. And they got to get to them as fast as possible and pursue criminal proceedings against these people who have been buying everybody off in the past. I mean, you look at the campaign contributions for these people, especially the president, $1.2 million from Goldman Sachs, $1 million from J.P. Morgan Chase, and the whole list goes on and on. If these people don't have a chance before legislation is proposed to pursue them, they can't stop it. They won't have had the time to buy them off. And, of course, if they try to buy them off, frontal, they will call it, people, you know, who are in office, new people, are going to say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to report this to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And so I don't think they'll be real anxious to try to buy people quickly. And they have to do it quickly. Otherwise, legislation will be passed, and that legislation will put these people in jail eventually. But more importantly, there'll be all kinds of other legislation that would be passed reversing so many of the monstrous things that have been passed in the past by these people who are being paid off.
And also, I have the question to ask you, with the Obama's healthcare reforms, how heavily is that going to affect the economy within the United States? Because I've heard so many different stories. What have you heard?
It's going to be a disaster financially. I mean, they have a fiscal deficit this year probably of about $1.7 trillion. That's the end of September's fiscal year. And you know, the figure changes every day. But when all is said and done, it could be as high as $2 trillion. And they're talking the same numbers for the next 10 years. Now, number one, they can't sell the bonds they're issuing now. The tick figures just came in today for last month. The Chinese bought $5 billion less of treasuries. The Japanese bought $300 million less. Those are the two main buyers. They own more of the treasury paper than anybody else does. And so what's happening is that foreigners are reluctant to continue to buy U.S. treasuries or agencies. Agencies are Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Ginnie Mae, and FHA. And last year, we know, even though the Fed didn't tell us this, that the Fed, which creates money out of thin air, for those who don't know, and it's a private corporation, they bought 80% of the treasuries because they couldn't sell them. So let's go back to this deficit thing. Do they really think they're going to be able to sell that kind of numbers of bonds? And the answer is no. They're not going to be able to. So what are they going to do next? I think they're going to go after the private pension plans in the United States and insurance companies and force them to buy treasuries. That's what I think they're going to do. And I think eventually, a couple of years down the line, they'll have another meeting like the Smithsonian in the 70s and the Plaza Accord of 85 and the Louvre Accord of 87 and everybody will devalue, and on a multilateral basis, countries is what I mean, and they will also default, and the amount of haircut that's given will be decided probably by the G20. And then we'll go into a deflationary depression. This is where this is all headed. The United States and other countries have been creating money and credit for the last 7 years to offset the underflow of deflation in their countries, of course, with varying degrees. And the United States and Great Britain being among the larger countries that are in the worst shape. There's 19 countries on the verge of bankruptcy or that are already bankrupt. You already know about Iceland and Greece, and there'll be lots more to follow. And that's why they're going to have this meeting. And it is going to come. And most people don't understand yet. But they will once the devaluation takes place and they have a depression for the next 30 or 40 years.
And also, I was reading through your newsletter, and actually it talked about the commercial mortgages, right? If they're not financing, if not, refinanced next couple of years, what actually is the ramification that's going to happen if that doesn't happen to Canada and United States in regards to jobs, and how does it affect ordinary people?
Well, first of all, the banks don't want to lend unless you put 20% or more down. And even if you have good credit, because they know what's coming, and they just don't—they want to have as little money out as possible. Plus, they're all running two sets of books. One set's got the bad assets, and the other set's got the good assets. And occasionally, they take a bad asset and put it on the good side because they want to write it off. But they're all running two sets of books. It's crazy. I mean, the earnings you read from major corporations. They're the result of dual bookkeeping, if you want to call it that. And it's a fact. And the Bank for International Settlements was supposed to stop that in January. And the FASB, which is an international accounting organization that all banks are supposed to abide by, they said it's okay to keep two sets of books. I don't know what they're thinking about.
And you were talking about a depression, you know, for the next 30 to 40 years. Was that going to be conditions similar to the dirty 30s when there was mass unemployment? People were considered, you know, they'd travel with their vehicles, they'd live out of their vehicles. There was no real, 20, 30% unemployment. Is that that kind of conditions?
Well, first of all, unemployment, as we're told, was 25% during the 1930s. It's already 22.8% in the United States right now. If you use the U6 and you strip out the birth-death ratio, which is nothing but a way to rig the figures, and we're going to go up to 30, 35, 40, 50%. So it'll be twice as bad, minimal. And it's going to spread all over the world. I mean, there are countries that are not going to hurt as much as others. Canada, Australia, Norway, Switzerland, the first three because of their natural resources, and Switzerland, you know, being a very unique country. I'll just leave it at that. I lived there for a long time, and I speak French and German, so I know how they operate. But anyway, that's where this thing is headed, and there's no stopping it. And people ask me, well, how will Canada fare? On a scale of 10 being worst, you get the United States and Great Britain. Probably Canada will be about a 5, maybe a 4. So they'll come out fairly well. And one of the reasons is that the countries that didn't get involved in a big way would leverage real estate will probably do much better than those that did. So, you know, had Canada not used real estate in a way that created high prices, they would have been much better off. But prices will eventually come down in Canada. What percentage is hard to say. It all depends on how things evolve and how much they devalue along with everybody else. See, what people don't realize is the devaluations don't mean anything. It's just a recognition of what's already happened. and you want to avoid all those losses, you buy gold and silver or gold and silver shares. And goodness knows, we recommend five Canadian companies, four of which are blue chips. And that's where people should be putting their money.
And also with Canada, there's actually, I heard a rumor where the Chinese government is going to get heavily involved with investing in Arctic as the ice begins to melt, and they're going to basically, they're looking towards the not only Northwest Passage as being an international sort of freeway is what they're looking at. They're also looking at the fact there's a lot of oil up there and other minerals at the same time. Have you heard what percentage actually the Chinese government is investing in northern Canada?
I don't know the percentage, but I know that they want assets anywhere they can find them for any kind of a reasonable price. And it's not only in Canada. They just bought half of the oil operation in Argentina. It was announced yesterday. They're involved in the financing of the Brazil deep drilling project. They get around. They want to dump dollars, and you know, who can blame them? And they will be buying more in Canada if Canada allows them to.
And will carbon credits actually replace the U.S. dollar as the U.S. dollar begins to collapse?
Never. Never. The people of the world will not accept some sort of a crazy, I mean, if you think fiat currency is bad, carbon credits, absolute total madness. I mean, it's beyond any sane person's thinking. And that's what cap and trade is all about.
Yeah, there is with the cap and trade that actually that can seriously affect the United States and the Canadian production. And, you know, I don't support the cap and trade in any way, because then it basically puts a ceiling on how much you're actually going to put out.
And, well, not only that, it's those taxes. And the UN's always got their hand out so they can internationalize everything under a one-world government. And that's what these people are all looking for. And in the process, they all become like George Soros. He's a criminal, incidentally. You become a multi-billionaire. And so all of these members, these elitists of their little groups, all become billionaires. And then there's the rest of us who don't have anything.
And also, there's Rockefeller Bill S-773 is this internet bill put in the United States. They're trying to take over They're trying to take over the internet, sort of thing, and hand it over to the United Nations. New Zealand just basically put a filter on its ISP addresses, blocking out certain ISP addresses. Australia's done it. China's done it. Saudi Arabia. You know, and the list goes on and on. You know, how long do you foresee it's going to be before the UN gets justification to actually to take over the internet as long as Obama's in office?
They do that, they get a revolution. The people who use the internet, generally speaking, are under 50, and they all know how to carry weapons. You don't want to do that. They do that, they're asking for real trouble. It's just like in the United States, of saying, well, we're going to come and take your guns. And the answer from Americans will be, out of my cold, dead hand.
Yeah, that's one thing I noticed when my wife and I were down in the United States, is they believe in the right to bear arms. And, you know, up here in Canada, sadly, we've gone to a gun control society. You know, being ex-military, a veteran from the military, I'm someone that I believe that you should have the right to bear arms, but you should do it safely. You have to treat a weapon as a deadly object, and you always have to treat it with respect. That's what I've been taught, you know, and there have been some people I've looked at that I don't agree they have the right to bear arms, but however, is I'm not going to say anything because, you know, they do have that right written in to basically their constitution. But I wish here in Canada that we'd put that before the people and let the people decide whether they want to have it or not. I know I would be voting for it as long as it's done safely.
Well, there's been a lot of things said about what might be happening in the future in the United States. And I do military programs. And I've had top people tell me that if they are given an unlawful order, they will not follow it. And they've also told me that if they bring foreign troops in the United States, they will not return home.
Also, you were writing something in your newsletter. It talked about the full body scan in airports and the law which requires all Canadians who've flight may come in contact with U.S. Airspace but not land in it. What are your thoughts about how a certain percentage of Canadians are, by these actions and others, having their basic rights to travel stripped from them? And if these draconian policies of treating the people as sheep continue, how will this affect, basically my home nation of Canada?
Well, there's not much they can do about it. They don't have any guns. So they'll be subjected to doing whatever the Canadian government says the United States government can do to them. I mean, you know darn right well, and I lived in Canada, incidentally, or for an extended period of time. And the United States dictates indirectly to the Canadian government. And they're not going to be able to stop them. You know, Washington say, look, if that's the way you feel, you can't use our airspace, and you can't land any planes in the United States. And besides that, we'll cut off all your banking connections, your telephones going into the United States, your internet, the whole works. And incidentally, I've talked to presidents of countries that are no longer presidents, but people who I know. And they had the United States government come in and tell them, you're going to do this, that, and the other thing, or that's what we're going to do to you.
And also at this time, we have to remember that the United States government is actually the body that controls the Internet, because they were the ones that invented the Internet to begin with.
That's correct, 1972.
And with the Internet, do you actually foresee something like, Internet? I've heard people talk about Internet 2 coming in, or some variation where they're going to start clamping down on it. Do you foresee anything like that happening?
Well, I think they might try it, but, if they want to have everybody unemployed in America for 2 weeks or a month because everybody goes on strike because they don't have free access to the Internet anymore, then let them do it. They have a revolution on their hands.
And also, we just had the Olympics here in Canada, in Vancouver, and they're saying it costs something like about $6 billion for this, just a number that's been thrown out there, but, it could be much higher. They're shipping snow over to Mount to Cypress Mountain, about $10 million to do that because it was too warm up here. This is the warmest place ever that they've had the Winter Olympics. And it took almost 30 years over in the city of Montreal to pay back the debt from the Olympics. Have you heard anything how long actually it's going to take the city of Vancouver, people within British Columbia and Canada actually to pay back this debt that just been incurred because of the Olympics here in Vancouver?
No, I have not. I have not, and what was it they had in the 90s there? What was it, the World's Fair? No, it was the 80s.
86, they had the Expo here in Vancouver.
Expo, that was it. Yeah, I went to that, and it was really funny. My daughter ran into a girl she went to high school with in Switzerland at the Expo. Strange things happen in life. But anyway, that was very well run, and that was profitable. But the Olympics is another story, and I just don't know what the numbers are. And politicians always tend to tell you that it's going to cost less than it does. And but they wanted to have it, they got it, and they're going to have to live with it.
Yeah, we're looking forward to high property taxes, higher bus fare rates, and the list goes on and on. We also harmonization tax, where they're going to put GST and PST together. And they're just going to tax the living daylights out of us while we watch the corporations that are stealing our natural resources, getting away with it. And soon the water out of BC is going to be shipped out too, because they're going to be allowing our government's going to be allowing certain corporations to steal that. And I remember in the past you and I were talking about that. But we only have a couple minutes left, and I was wondering if you could leave us with last words.
Well, I think you've covered the important points. For those of you who would want a free copy of my publication, go to the internet, theinternationalforecaster.com, theinternationalforecaster.com, and we'll send you a copy. And I think probably the most pressing issue is that there's no recovery in the United States that's going to last any amount of time. The stimulus runs out the end of next month. The Fed is pulling money that they put into country to save Wall Street for all intents and purposes and banking. They're starting to pull that money back out, and if they're not careful, they could end up with this whole thing going downhill very quickly.
So it's almost like basically you could say that the first term for President Obama will make him a lame duck, is that what one thing basically that they were saying about GW?
He's been a lame duck since he came in.
Well, thank you so much for coming on there, Bob. That's Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster, is Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, CFRO, Monday Brown Bagger. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you again for coming on there, Bob.
Happy to. We'll be back. Bye-bye, and Bye. Thanks for listening.